Welcome to another episode of the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. This is Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and in today's episode, we're going to be taking a look at an art exhibit that brings to light one of the untold stories that many people choose not to see, and this would be homelessness. In life, there is high tide and there is low tide, and while many of us strive to stay at that high tide level, as we all know, life fluctuates. And if circumstances stay at that low tide for long enough, some serious consequences can occur. Currently, the Paramount Theater and Visual Arts Center is exhibiting The Oral History of Homelessness, an exhibit consisting of 50 photographs, with half of them accompanied by phone numbers, enabling viewers to dial in using a cell phone to hear the story of the individual in the photograph. This exhibit was inspired by the American Life Histories Collection from the Library of Congress. It came about with the U.S. Works Progress Administration beginning in 1936. This collection includes close to 3,000 documents concerning the life stories of families around the country during the Depression and how individuals dealt with their situation. The Oral History of Homelessness is the same and is running through Saturday, June 29th, before moving on to be exhibited in the cities. And to talk about this exhibit, as well as the issue of homelessness within our community, I'm joined by Rick Podvin from Catholic Charities and Jessica Johnson and Christine Midtham from the United Way. So if I could just have each of you introduce yourself briefly and tell us what you do for your organizations, and we'll begin the discussion about the exhibit, Homelessness is My Address, Not My Name.
Well, I'm Rick Podvin, and I manage transitional housing and supportive permanent housing for Catholic Charities at a number of different projects, and I'm also the current chair of the St. Cloud Area Homeless Concerns Group.
And I'm Christine Mattoon, and I am the Director of Community Relations, and I help support, we have five different focus areas within United Way, and one of the focus areas is homelessness and also financial stability, and I support those teams, basically looking at the needs, involving volunteers around the issues and also in the funding related to those two issues.
I'm Jessica Johnson, and I do the marketing at United Way, and so I'm kind of the one that packages everything together, pulls the stats together, and helps us communicate with the community what's going on.
Okay, so we're talking about Homelessness is My Address, Not My Name. There's an exhibit that is downtown at the Paramount gallery right now, and it's a series of photographs of people who are experiencing homelessness, and then there are telephone numbers that accompany these photographs where people can call the number and then hear the story of, well, these individuals and these families. And one of the things that kind of struck me about this exhibit is just the title, that Homelessness is My Address, Not My Name. That kind of comes from that idea of you are homeless, or somebody saying, I am homeless. I don't know, it's kind of a neat title and concept, really.
Well, I think the exhibit points to the stereotypical language, the semantics of people saying, it's a homeless person. And it's kind of a derogatory, dismissive, negative connotation. So the exhibit points to the fact that this is real people. These are our neighbors, and that it is people experiencing homelessness rather than this homeless person in a derogatory way. So I think it's very respectfully done, and points to the struggle equally, if not more so, than the need of individuals experiencing homelessness.
Yeah, and I guess I actually was at the homeless convention a year ago in October, and I experienced this exhibit as well as some of my colleagues that are part of the Homeless Concerns Group, and we were struck by it. Some of our local providers actually helped identify individuals that participated in this, but really St. Stephen's really wanted to build awareness about people experiencing homelessness in Minnesota and really the human side of those individuals. And I think we're always so careful to say that it's individuals, it's the human side of it. It's not just that they're characterized as being homeless first, that there is the human component of that. And I guess I was especially struck by this when I was at the convention, And obviously there's a lot of service providers, people that are advocates for homelessness. But in this picture, as I was walking among these pictures, there's also people in attendance that are experiencing homelessness at this convention. And so they'll sit in sessions with us and participate. And when I was standing next to this picture of this young mom and her child, the mom was actually standing next to the picture. So she was actually there. And so for me, it had not only are the pictures very moving, I think the pictures are very well taken, but for me it had even more of an effect. And about 15 or 20 of the pictures have that phone number attached to them, so you can hear the voice of the person and what really led them to these circumstances. And I think people will be surprised, too, that it's not the stereotypical things that cause homelessness, and that it can be everyday people, your neighbors, anyone. But it does happen here in Central Minnesota.
Yeah, and that's kind of that thing. There's a stereotype with the homelessness where, it could just happen. Most people are like, two paychecks away from serious crisis. So,
yeah, it's like there's this, the stereotypical general public almost looks at homelessness as a choice. And I don't think anybody would actually choose to be in that situation.
Well, when we talk about somewhat the stereotype of people considering homelessness to be a choice, one of the examples I use is part of my, the folks I work with are women with children who are working, moving forward to establish support systems and long-term stability and struggling to do that. They are receiving assistance through the Minnesota Family Investment Program, the MFIP program. There's expectations. There's a 40-hour work equivalent agenda required, a time card for a monthly stipend for a woman with one child, $437. And so when you do the math on that, it boils down to about $2.35 an hour. Not a choice that anybody would willingly make. And the other thing is that dollar amount, $437 in this case, has not changed for nearly 25 years. That is the same actual dollar amount. So in 1985 or 86, that $437 might actually get you a cheap apartment. Now, nowhere close. So I think that is significant.
Oh, yeah, especially when you're trying to struggle to, fill up your gas tank for a month with that, if you're driving around, that could, and,
right.
that's one of those things, to kind of come back to the stereotype with that, is that it's almost like people envision, the classic hobo or something.
Right.
No, that's not it. I had a friend who was homeless in the cities, and he was part of a program down there where people would get cell phones because one of the things that would get in the way of them not being able to get out of their situation is nobody could call them back for a job interview. So people gave cell phones, so they were part of the cell phone program, and there are some people that were really upset with that. And it's kind of one of those things where it's like, no, wait a second, this could really help, but we're looking at a cell phone as a luxury, and this is a different dynamic that's going on. Well, it's a problem, matter of perception. And then I think this comes back to, what's going on with, one of the numbers that you all had within the website was there are over 300 Central Minnesota kids that are involved with this or that are homeless in some form or fashion. It's a cyclical thing. These kids are learning these skills, so yeah, maybe they could deal with this stuff later, but it is this cycle of poverty. How do they break out of that?
Well, I think it's really important to see homelessness as a symptom of poverty, as an outcome of poverty, one of the more drastic and dramatic outcomes of poverty. And in my over 20 years working with people experiencing homelessness, the availability of those support systems in the community that will match them, that will meet them halfway with their struggle and really give them the tools that they need to actually get someplace. And I always say I'm kind of in the promise business. I'm kind of the tip of the spear of our society saying to people, if you work very hard, you can actually have a simple, decent life. And I've been able to make that promise and keep that promise. And I hope that, you know, I can continue to do that. It's a challenge. Every year is a challenge to stave off the erosion of support systems. It's becoming more and more difficult and heartbreaking, really, to be poor in our society. And homelessness is one of the ultimate examples of that.
Yeah, and from a United Way perspective, you know, we have kind of two broader areas, education and also basic needs, but you could easily put, you know, poverty within that. But what we look at is within basic needs, we have three different areas that we've really invested in a significant amount of dollars in, and that's access to food, that's financial stability, and homelessness. And what we look at is we kind of look at it as a spectrum. Again, from that immediate need, whether it be shelter, food, clothing, to moving people to hopefully getting them supportive housing, like a program like Rick is talking about, like Doma's transitional housing, eventually to try and give them the skills so that they can be ultimately self-sufficient and give them those tools. Or like the TRICAP, the FAME program, it's a match savings program to encourage people to save. It's a 3-to-1 match if they're disciplined, if they qualify, they can put that towards their first house, towards education, or starting their own business. So I guess when we address poverty, we try and look at people as assets and work with programs that help us, again, meet people where they're at, but also encourage them. And it's not just a handout, but a hand up. So that's where really United Way is really trying to focus and really make the biggest impact, because we know that there's a gap in this area. And if we can put additional resources and also pull other people together to leverage those resources, because we know United Way can't do it all, but we know if we can start to build awareness like this exhibit does about the issues, have some conversations about it, get the right people at the table, that maybe we can make a bigger impact and reduce this problem or eliminate some of these problems.
You know, when Christine talks about having an impact, another word for that is getting results. And I think when we look at the system of response, going back to donors, taxpayers, legislated officials coming to the table and saying what needs to happen, they're always a part of that dialogue is, how are we going to get results? And so the donors, the taxpayers contribute in a way, and programs like United Way and state agencies, in some cases, grant programs funding based on their results, based on what they can actually accomplish, what they have accomplished. And I think what I want the donors and taxpayers and voters to know is that that stream of expectation and accountability does not stop with the program that receives the funding. It stops with the participant of that program, and the expectation and accountability flows right to that program participant saying, we have an opportunity for you. This is not free lunch. I remember as a kid, my dad had a barbecue apron that said, free lunch is now $2. Are you still hungry? And and that's an example I give to my clients. We have a resource. We have a very limited resource that's available to you. We support, we encourage, but we also have expectations and accountability, and that works. And people ask for that, and they appreciate it, and they are successful with that.
Well, I think one thing that I always look at is kind of like you said, it's more than homelessness. It's, you know, we have our education, we have our basic needs, but if you think about it, kids who are homeless, the education, it comes back around to them. They can't learn as well and get through school as well. And I worked with a class at St. Cloud State last semester, and we talked a lot about homelessness, and it kind of struck them as, when I was talking to their class, I said, you know, it's 3:00 right now, and the bell's going to ring, and students are getting out of class, and there's 325 kids that are going to go home, and, well, really, they're not going to go home. They have nowhere to go. They have nowhere to do their homework. They have nowhere to go after school but walk the streets. And the other thing that struck them as well is I said, you know, you might be college students and you might not have kids, but this affects all of us, because kind of what Rick said, it goes back to when people are homeless, our taxpayer dollars increase because we're paying for the police department to possibly bring these people to the emergency room. They're using the emergency room as their form of health care. And so it really does come back to an issue that the entire community, it affects the entire community, not just those individuals that are experiencing it at the time.
You're listening to 88.1 FM, KVSC, and the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. In today's episode, I'm sitting down with Rick Podvin from Catholic Charities and Christine Mitham and Jessica Johnson from the United Way. And we're discussing Homelessness is My Address, Not My Name, an exhibit of photographs and personal stories from people who are experiencing homelessness, which is being hosted by the Paramount Galleries through Saturday, June 29th. And now we rejoin the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota with some of the success stories that have come out of these programs.
Well, I'd like to say that in terms of success and models of success, I can go back to the program I've managed for over 23 years now, and we've worked with probably 15 families a year. Long-term stability is the objective. And we have had zero repeat customers, if we want to call people customers of the service. We've had zero repeat customers, and in our business, that's a good thing. In the other parts of the business world, repeat customers is what you're after. We are after no repeat customers. And so that's a great barometer of success. I had a woman a number of years ago, 42-year-old woman with two adolescent children. After about 2 weeks in our transitional housing program, a shared living transitional housing site, say to me, "Rick, I got to tell you something. This is what I always thought a home would be like." And I thought, man, 42 years old, and I'm so happy that we can provide that. But also pretty sad that was the case. I mean, that was needed. But it is needed.
Yeah, but now she knows. And then...
That's right.
She can take that with her and develop
it. We've had
that.
Contact with her over the few years now and, you know, telling us that one of her children has now graduated and that her daughter's in band and great, you know, kind of goosebump stuff for us and for the people who support that and the people who are... They're saying, yes, we're willing to contribute to that. We're willing to be part of that. So the other thing my clients ask me to do when they find out that we're out here kind of spreading the word is to say thank you. So on their behalf, I say thank you.
Cool.
I had the opportunity to sit down with a young man just a few months ago for the first time. And he went through the SHY program, which is through Catholic Charities for supporting housing for youth who are either homeless or at risk of being homeless. I had breakfast with him at the Capital One Cafe downtown. And he said to me, he said, "Why did you pick here?" And I said, "Well, I thought it was a central location and it worked." And he said, "Well, this is a very familiar place to me." And I said, "Why is that?" And he said, "This is what I remember as being a child, these streets downtown St. Cloud. All we did was walk around." Mm-hmm. "For hour after hour after hour, all we did was walk. I got out of school until the school day next day, we'd walk the streets. That's my childhood." And this gentleman right now is 19 years old, and he experienced homelessness basically his whole entire life. And he told me his story, and it's terrible. It's terrible to think about a child or a youth who has to experience homelessness and not have those childhood memories and dreams that we all have. And he talked about, he always went to school, and that was really important no matter what his family was going through, and his he had siblings and a mother that he was with. But he always went to school, and he talked about a couple things with, that was his only meal of the day, and so he loved it. He got to go and had a hot meal at school. But he talked about a specific instance where a child in the lunchroom, another student, poured milk on him. We all know how bullying is a thing that's gotten worse. But he talked about smelling like sour milk for days, because as a homeless child, he had nowhere to wash it off. He had no shampoo. He had no soap. He couldn't get clean. And that was the hardest thing for him. He said it wasn't being hungry, it was smelling bad, not having that hope. Just being clean gives you hope. And he talked a lot about that and how important that was. He finally got out of it. His mom had left him when he was, I think, 17 years old, and up and left, and he was homeless again, obviously. They were living in an apartment. They did have an apartment at the time, but being his mom left, they were going to be evicted. He had no money. And that's when he heard about the SHY program through Catholic Charities, and they helped him find a place to stay. And the other thing that struck me is things that we don't realize homeless people need or don't have. And so he talked about not having his birth certificate. And so he went to try to get his birth certificate, but he needed a Social Security card. Well, he didn't have a Social Security card, so he went to try to get that. And they wanted a driver's license, but he didn't have a driver's license. And in order to get that or an ID card, you need a birth certificate. So it's this cycle that we don't even realize these people are trying so hard, but there's so many roadblocks for them. And so the SHY program has helped him through getting these goals. He had a whole sheet of goals, and he has accomplished every single one of them. He has a job now, a full-time job with benefits, and every time I talk to him, he's so excited to tell me he has benefits, and he has money in his pocket, and he has food in his refrigerator, and he has a savings account, and he has a little apartment to himself, and he's just... It's an amazing story. And the other thing that I think is amazing about him is, as a 19-year-old kid, I mean, he's still a kid, he wants to give back now. He has helped us. We had a United Way had a Back to the Basics drive where we collected hygiene products for homeless youth and children in our community just last week, and he was there the whole entire time. He was helping us collect those items and telling people his story and what it was like to be homeless, to help us collect those items. And it was amazing. And he talks about, he when I talked to him, he said, I want to volunteer, I want to speak, I want to tell my story, I want to help as much as possible, because like Christine said, it's not a handout, it's a hand up. And that's how he sees it. He was given the opportunity to have a successful life and get out of that cycle. And when I asked him where he would be at if it weren't for the SHY program and United Way and those programs that helped him, he said he'd still be on the street, or even worse. He has no idea where he'd be at this point.
Well, yeah, it's a matter of, well, what do you do when you have nothing to do, mm-hmm. or nowhere to go? And well, I don't care how good of a kid he is, but he's 18, 19. Guess what? You're going to get into trouble, because that's what we all do. But I think coming back around to him wanting to give back, I think that we could all speak to that, just we've witnessed that when somebody is experiencing difficulty, they get out of the difficulty and it's like, okay, let me back up and help somebody else. It's almost like, you know, there's a ladder and they've gotten to the top of the ladder and they realize, oh, wait, there's a lot more people down there. And so you guys kind of found that as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
Absolutely, and that's what I think I've been amazed by. You know, although we're not a direct service provider, you know, working with these programs, we have usually a lot of people coming to us to tell us their story, and you know, they serve as testimonials for us, or they're willing to help out in so many different aspects, and that's what the spirit that they have, considering what they've been through and everything else too. And I just so admire that. By this gentleman is just one example of the just the caring spirit and how they want to just really pay it forward because of what people have given them.
We have, on the idea of giving back, we have a number of our residents at the Al Lair Supportive Housing Project in St. Cloud who volunteer in the community at the food shelf and over at the VA, helping with pushing wheelchairs around. And one of them was at the VA doing that wheelchair duty a week before Al Lair died. And Al was at the VA hospital in a wheelchair. And one of our residents came up and said, well, I'm here to take you down the road. And Al said, well, thank you very much. And he said, when, where do you live? And the guy says, well, I live at the Al Lair Apartments. And Al said, well, how do you like it over there? What's it like? And our resident came back and told us this later. He said, so I told him, it's the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. It's just what I needed. And it's one of the reasons I'm here today, pushing this wheelchair and doing this volunteer. And then Al said, well, just by the way, I'm Al Lair. And they got to shake hands and have that kind of cathartic experience a week before Al passed away. So we thought it was a pretty interesting story.
You know, we've been involved. Jessica's actually helped us do, you know, obviously we have people that contribute to United Way for a lot of different, supporting a lot of these programs. But we've done the last 2 years thank you videos where we have people that have been recipients of programs thank some of our donors. And I know we actually just filmed ours within the last month. And some of those donors, we actually got a really nice story of someone that has contributed to United Way for quite a while, but how it was just really ingrained in her and how she just really appreciated us taking the time and also meeting some people that she could have helped. Because I think that's the other thing, other side of things, that people think they want to give to United Way and they want to hear about that, everything else too, but they were really touched by us taking the time to also thank them and to hear their stories.
Yeah, somebody gives you $20. Well, where does that $20 go?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. People want to know where their money is.
We can thank people all we want. You know, as program people, we can go back to them and say, thank you so much. But to be able to put a name and a face to that person that you impacted and made a difference in their life, is it means the world to them. And so we find it very important to do that.
Oh, yeah, it's a very powerful, positive feedback cycle there. Yeah. So this exhibit, where is this going to be next? It's going to be leaving St. Cloud here shortly, but...
Yeah, it's going to be going back to the Metro. It actually is housed out of St. Stephen's Human Services, and so we'll be taking it back to the Metro. And I don't know where it specifically is going to be next, but it has been traveling through the state. These pictures were actually taken in 2010 and 2011, so it's actually been traveling throughout the state. And obviously there's local people pictured in them, but I'm not sure. It'll be somewhere in the Metro, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see it in outstate area again.
Yep, the place where I found this online where people can go is oralhistoryofhomelessness.org. So people can check that out and see what's going on. So, one, what? How can people get involved to help with this and other things that you guys have going on? And also, well, what do you have going on?
Well, I think there's a variety of different things. It really depends on, you know, what people want to get involved with. But if we're talking about homelessness in general or, you know, items related to poverty, United Way of Central Minnesota has a volunteer center, United Way of Central Minnesota, and you can go to our website at www.unitedwayhelps.org, and you can actually visit that. And there's probably about 300 opportunities, not just for the homeless population, but for a variety of different places. But you can actually go in there and basically do a search. Or you can actually call our office. We have a dedicated volunteer coordinator that could help you connect to that. And again, for individuals, groups, families, a variety of opportunities. So that's one way. We also have, one of the focus areas is the homelessness area. And we have what's called community solution teams. And we have people from the business community, educators, service providers that really participate in these teams and really help shape the funding decisions, help shape what else we can do around these issues. So if they're interested, they can also contact United Way and want to get involved that way. Also from a public policy perspective, I mean, we have, and Rick had mentioned that he's the chair of our homeless concerns group. We meet monthly, and we have some advocates that attend our meetings monthly, and there's some opportunities that we've had with legislators to actually tell about what, maybe if there's a policy that's actually going through or we want to lobby on that. We have even made some trips to the Capitol on that too. So if they're interested in that too, they can contact United Way or also Rick at Catholic Charities to get involved with the Homeless Concerns Group. But there's, like I said, there's a lot of different ways. And obviously, you know, giving back financially too is also a way that they can give through United Way. But that depends on how give looks to them. If it looks at, like, from a volunteer perspective, giving their time or giving resources or advocating on behalf of the issues. And I think one other resource that United Way does invest resources in is United Way 211. And it's a community helpline, but people can simply dial 211 and they can actually get a live person that can help navigate resources, complex, you know, social service resources. Or they can find out, they can call and say, hey, I want to donate something, or I have a couch I need to recycle. Those types of things. Or again, sharing that number with someone else that needs that maybe more immediate need, but they can get a live person with a statewide resource, and that's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So that is also available.
Yes, and I think that, as it relates to advocacy, I think that's very important. And there's a statewide organization, the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless, with a website, mnhomelesscoalition.org. And for advocacy, awareness of the broader issues of the statewide and national issues, that's a great resource. I think if a person wants to become aware of just basic issues of housing affordability and some economic issues. The Minnesota Housing Partnership has a local office. Their website is mhponline.org. They've got a tremendous amount of data that really supports the fact that this is a critical issue. Affordable housing is a critical issue, and no matter how hard people work and what they accomplish, if there's not affordable housing at the end of the road, at the top of the hill, it's still not a success story. So I think advocacy is a very important thing. And as Christine said, financial contribution, volunteering is also very important. So again, from our clients, for anything that people do get involved in on that level, we say thank you. And I would add just quickly that if anyone wants to join us in the Homeless Concerns Group, the monthly convening of that group, they could email me, rpodvin@cccloud.org.
Are you also kind of available off the Catholic Charities website too, if they find your
right
way to
they
that?
Can they yep. can click on the website and go to housing and find me
there
in
are
that
many point. Ways to get a hold of people. It's yeah. gee, I wonder how make it easy for people to get a hold of you, and then you get all the then people get a hold of you. So
this has been Jeff Carmack reporting for KVSC News and the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. And for more information on Homelessness Is My Address, Not My Name, you can find it online at oralhistoryofhomelessness.org. And you can also connect with Catholic Charities at ccstcloud.org or the United Way at unitedwayhelps.org or by simply dialing 211. The Untold Stories of Central Minnesota is funded through the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and has been produced at KVSC Studios, a proud member of Amperz, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities.